This podcast is a part of the Blueberry Network. You can find this and other great podcasts at blueberry.com. That's blueberry with no E's .com.
Hi, I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm...
You were not ready. He wasn't ready.
He doesn't know who he is this morning.
Okay. All right.
I freaked myself out. Okay.
Hi, I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Schaup.
I'm Marcia Fulmer. And we are Theater Geeks.
Hi, welcome to Theater Geeks, a podcast about community theater and the performing arts. And I think that apropos of our topic for today, we had sort of an improv moment there just a second ago with John. And I think that that might be a good lead in to our guest for today, who is Mr. Ed Trout, who is the artistic director for Comedy Sports in Indianapolis. Welcome to Theater Geeks, Ed.
Thank you so much.
Tell just so that our listeners understand, what exactly is Comedy Sports and how does it work? And let's just start from that point.
Sure. Comedy Sports is improvisational comedy. So Everything is made up on the spot based off of audience suggestions. It's presented as a competition between two teams. We always have a red team and a blue team. And the referee is there to moderate, to get suggestions from the audience, and to call certain fouls because we do treat it as a sport. They are competing. So we have a groaner foul for really bad puns and things that elicit groans from the audience.
David would win that all the time.
And we have the brown bag foul, which is for inappropriate content, because we're an all-ages show. So A performer knows that they have to keep it on the straight and narrow and keep things clean and sensible for all ages. And that also applies to the audience members. They can also get a brown paper bag put over their head if they say something inappropriate.
Oh, I love it.
Oh, great.
I was going to say, I had forgotten about that. I had actually gone to one of your events in, I don't know if it was Charlotte or Raleigh, North Carolina, years ago.
Yes.
And I enjoyed myself immensely. It was a blast. But I do remember that it was a family event, and which I really appreciated at the time, especially because there were families there, and it was fun to, you know,
so
for everybody
good,
to participate.
It was for them.
Well, but
right.
It was nice because everybody could participate and enjoy. It was nice.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And there are not a lot of real all ages venues like that are available to people, especially like right now, you know, looking at holiday weekends or whatever going on, people are looking for family things. And it's hard when you have a family to find something appropriate. So we pride ourselves on the fact that anybody can come in and it's all good.
Well, there's the zoo.
There is the zoo. Absolutely.
The zoo and the children's museum.
The zoo is visual.
And we do
That's
love those
thing.
Places.
That's right.
We do, but sometimes it's fun to reach outside the box there.
Well, it's sort of a nightclub experience, but for all ages?
Sort of, yeah. It's set up cabaret style for our theater. So we have tables and chairs, and we have table service, and then we have a stage. And so it's very sort of nightclubby cabaret in feel, just not necessarily the full adult, you know, smoky alcohol everywhere. We do serve beer, but it's a very concession style arrangement to food and beverage as opposed
right,
to
right.
Okay, can I ask you now? See, it went right out of my head. This is going to be a wonderful morning. You're located in Indianapolis, correct?
Right. We're downtown on Massachusetts Avenue.
Okay. Now, are you like a franchise? Are there other comedy sport locations around the country?
Absolutely are, even overseas.
Okay.
We're not a franchise, but it functions similar to a franchise. We're technically a trade organization.
Okay.
So we've got other cities that are all part of the World Comedy League.
Oh,
and
okay.
We all work together as well. Every summer we all come together for a world championship.
I was going to say, the World Comedy League could probably beat the Cubs this year, as far as I'm concerned.
Anybody could.
I don't think that would take much.
That's right.
No, the reason I was asking is because I went a couple of times when people I knew were performing at a thing called the Funny Bone, which they used to have one in South Bend. I don't know if they still do. And they were kind of all over the place, too. And then all of a sudden, they weren't all over the place. And I just wondered, did that whole thing kind of go away? Because it was definitely not family-oriented. Well, you know, I mean, it wasn't. We all went once to see a guy perform who was on an ABC soap opera, and I was kind of really shocked at what came out of his mouth because I didn't think it would be that blue. So I just wondered if is that why you guys are really focused on keeping it a friendly for all ages?
Not specifically because of that. It's not that we necessarily see it as a changing demographic, but we do see it as a need that not a lot of people fill, and so we like to be able to fill that need. Mm-hmm. Now, for full disclosure, we do get one time slot in our lineup, which is our Friday late show, which is not necessarily an all-ages show. It's not a comedy sports performance.
Okay.
So that show is a rotating slot of things that are intended for audiences 17 and up.
Okay.
Now, let me ask you, now, who are the participants, the people that are on the red team and the blue team? Are these folks professionals or are
they?
Yes,
they are.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we have a stable of professional improvisers that have auditioned to be part of the group. Most of them have trained for a long time, even before mm-hmm. auditioning, and they continue training once they are part of the group as well. So those are the people that do the heavy lifting. We have audience members that give us suggestions, and usually once in a show, maybe a couple times in a show, we may ask for an audience volunteer for a specific game, but even at that point, we want the audience volunteer to feel very comfortable. So we don't ask a lot of them that we think they would be uncomfortable doing. We try to make them look good.
Okay.
Okay, John.
Oh, no, that's always good. Have you always been a professional organization, though, or did it start out more as an amateur type situation?
Once we were comedy sports, it's always been professional as an endeavor. There was a period before we were comedy sports where there two of the other owners and myself were part of a group called Below the Belt, which was a local improv and sketch comedy group. And that was a little more community feel, I guess you would say, where we're putting in our time and nobody's really expecting to get paid for it. We're just having fun with it. But once we became comedy sports, there was always a sense of professionalism. We were going to be paid for any events that were private events. And eventually we got to the point where we could pay for all of the in-house performances as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you find that it kind of limits the people who come out to audition to be in your professional troupe, kind of, because they have to keep the material of necessity at a certain level of cleanliness, let's say? I mean, I never knew that some of the comedians that you see now on TV were blue until recently, and then I love Buddy Hackett. Used to watch him, which shows how old I am. But he used to go on like Johnny Carson and do routines that were very, very funny and very clean. And then I saw him once, and it was like, whoa, you know, he's really blue.
That's right.
Right.
Yeah.
What we normally find is the people that come in and rely on shock value humor and rely on going blue to get their laughs, those people have a hard transition. But those people in our experience are not that common. Normally, if you're a good improviser, if you're a solid performer, you can keep it clean or you can play to the more adult side. Yeah. And it's more a matter of focus and what kind of performance you're going to give. Because typically, if you're relying on, I'm just going to say something dirty and get a big laugh with it, you're really not building a story.
So no, that's
you're,
right.
You're not creating anything. You're not working very hard, which means we wouldn't want you anyway. We want somebody. Yeah.
So there, we don't want you.
Well,
anyway.
you look back on Richard Pryor, who was pretty blue in a lot of cases, but genuinely funny and genuinely had story content behind it. He didn't.
Exactly.
He probably never needed to be that blue really to be funny, and he often wasn't. But
exactly.
Now I noticed that you do some classes. Do you get people like from community theater and amateurs who just want to come in and hone skills and do your classwork?
We get everything. We get community theater. We get professional performers. We get your everyday person off the street who's simply wanting to be able to think better on their feet. You get people that are in corporate society and need to be more comfortable with presentation skills. We mm-hmm. get the whole gamut.
Right. So you and so they take the training and now do you do and so how, what do they come? How long are the classes go? I guess if I want to take a class or take a
sure.
course, is it week long or what?
The classes meet once a week for 8 weeks,
mm-hmm.
and then we offer three different levels. We have the level 1, 2, and 3 that we offer once a quarter.
Okay.
So every season we have a set of workshops.
How do you determine if someone is a really good improviser? I guess that's the word.
That is the word.
But what about somebody who really doesn't? You must have a feel for it, an ear for it, and be able to do it kind of quickly and easily. What do you do when you run into people who just, for all their striving, can't be funny? I know several like that.
Sure. Well, the funny thing is, being funny isn't always your main focus as an improviser. If you're doing your job right, the funny just kind of happens, because what you're focused on is having some good strong characters and some strong relationships and telling an interesting story. And when you do all that and you're throwing in these unexpected suggestions, humor just arises out of that. And actually trying to get the funny and shove the funny in can sometimes be problematic.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay.
You get those people, they're trying to crack a joke in the middle of what's going on, and you just want to say, this isn't the place for the joke. Save the joke for a moment later. Let's get through this moment of story now. Deal with the character issue, and then we'll get to something humorous.
Ed, do you have characters that you have like in your back pocket that you bring out?
Of course.
Yeah.
That's all improvisers do. We have our fallbacks of, you know, like I can easily go to that hick type that I know from my family growing up.
Or
you go to the French diplomat or whatever it is, something that for you is just something that's comfortable to fall into. And everybody has them. And normally as an improviser, your goal isn't to discard those, but to build to that, so that you may have your half a dozen characters that you would normally have as go-tos, and you just keep building on those. And now what more can I do? And what haven't I done? And what's an accent I can fail at next?
Do you actually sit down and write character descriptions and backstories and things for those characters, or are they just characters you kind of have in your back pocket?
They're usually just characters in the back pocket, because every time you bring out a character, the other performers around you are free to assign them any kind of backstory that they need that's appropriate for what they have going on.
Sure.
So you can only assume so much in improv, and everything also has to be open to whatever anybody else gives you, because one of the foundations of improvisation is that you have to agree with each other. So no matter what I think my character's backstory is, if I think I'm a diplomat and somebody else comes in and says I'm a garbage man, I'm that garbage man, because that's what they've now said.
Yeah.
Right.
So I have to go forward.
Yeah. I've seen some really horrible improv where people keep getting denied on stage. And it's like, if you keep denying, it's not very fair to the other people on stage. Don't deny me.
Well, and nothing happens.
Yeah, exactly. It just stands still.
Argument. You know, anybody can have a 5-minute argument at home. That's not entertaining. We want something where something happens.
Yeah.
How do you teach somebody improvisation?
Through just hands-on exercises. That's okay. You talk about the basics. The five fundamentals would be what we would start with. So one of them is agreement. Another one is simply paying attention in the first place, because whatever somebody is saying, whatever they're doing, is part of your story. So you have to know and be aware.
Yeah.
You also have to put the team ahead of the individual. It's always the group effort, not just me trying to be a star. It's all of us working together. You have commitment to your characters, commitment to your storyline, and making sure that there's a sense of joy, a sense of fun in what you're doing. If you get all of those things in there, you're going to be doing some decent improvisation. There are always ways to clean it up, but you focus on those basics, and then through hands-on skills, you find ways of actually implementing them so that the people get a feel for what that feels like when you do it right.
I teach an intro to theater class up here at IU South Bend, and one of the things that I have the class do at some point is, and I it's either is or it was, it's based on a traditional theater game, is the continuing story. And it's hard to get them to understand that no, you can't change things.
Right.
If somebody says that I did this, they did that. And
right.
So, you know, and the, of course, they have to continue the story as if they're telling the story then. And it's hard for, it's really, especially for people who aren't exposed to it at all. Do you do the traditional, the Spolin exercises? Is that where you start with?
We do a lot of the Spolin exercises, but we certainly don't limit it to that. Spolin, she was a genius in the things that she put out there, and there are great foundations, but so much has built on those as well that, yeah, they are part of the mix, mm-hmm. but they're in there with a whole lot of other things as well.
Yeah, neat.
I was just going to say, who Spolin?
Yeah. Viola Spolin. Somewhere in this room.
I probably have an improv
somewhere
book
in this
of hers
room.
Here.
There is a box of.
We're sitting in a massive library,
games.
Just so you know, with millions of reference indexes. And no, but it is a library that we're sitting in right now.
Yeah, she's considered basically the mother of modern theatrical improvisation.
Right.
Even though from her vantage point, she preferred improvisation as a tool for fleshing out scripted work, not necessarily as an art form in and of itself for performance. But be that as it may, that's
right.
From her groundwork, everything really kind of
Somebody along the way discovered those were kind of fun to perform for people instead of doing them as exercises.
Her son, so.
Right? Yeah. Well, okay. I didn't know that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's neat.
See, now I've learned something else today.
There you go.
And I thought we were doing this just for fun.
You thought, Marcia hates it when she learns something.
I know. It's terrible.
Now, because you do touch on a lot of community theater and so forth as well, mm-hmm. just to put it out there, I would also like to point out that I just closed a community theater production of Big River playing Pap Finn. So I don't just do improv either. We get a lot of people that
so you're a legitimate actor.
Yeah. Right.
As opposed to illegitimate.
As opposed to,
sometimes improv is viewed as the redheaded stepchild.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Now, I'm intrigued by your work with corporate. Do you do, like, workshops in corporate settings and have people have sales teams participate? I thought that I may have seen something like that on your website.
You absolutely did, and we do that all the time.
Uh-huh.
We use those fundamentals that I just talked about, those five fundamentals of improvisation,
right,
and translate them into other settings, other organizations, and let them get a feel for how that works in their own setting,
mm-hmm.
so that you can get a better group effort out of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Because again, just the concept of, and we've all been there, you're in a group and you're trying to get ideas out and somebody's putting out ideas that just keep getting knocked down.
Yeah.
You know, and if you can't start from a place of at least acceptance that they're giving an idea,
sure,
they're eventually either going to stop contributing,
right,
or they're just going to get mad and defensive. So, you know, it's starting with that agreement of, hey, I love the fact you're contributing, or I love this approach, even if the idea itself can't work as is.
Yeah.
So it's getting some of those concepts put out into the workplace and into the day-to-day life.
Yeah, yeah. The number one rule of brainstorming is acceptance, at least temporary acceptance.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Can I ask you, who are your favorite comedians?
Good question. It really kind of depends on exactly what we're talking about. For sketch type comedy, which is a lot of the feel of improv,
uh-huh.
I would go back to some of the old variety shows like a Carol Burnett, that whole ensemble back there. I just adored the work they did because it was mainly scripted, but not always. And they just, again, had that sense of joy of what they were doing.
It was scripted until Tim Conway got a hold of it. That's kind of what it was.
Yes. And then Harvey Korman just fell apart.
Yeah.
And then going for more of a stand-up feel, somebody that I just adore because, again, it's clever, interesting, kind of universal, and relatively clean is Ellen DeGeneres. I always appreciate what she has to say in her comedy because it's just so relatable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I one of the reasons I like her and all the Burnett things is because they're not mean-spirited. And to me, right, so much of comedy, when you look on TV and you see the improv groups or comedy clubs,
mm-hmm.
and some of the routines are really, to me, they're really nasty. You know,
yep.
And I don't think that's the point of humor, no matter whether it's scripted or improv, you know.
Do you think Saturday Night Live is still the pinnacle? Or, I mean, I think it kind of was at one time, but I'm less impressed with it.
I think it is a lot more hit and miss than it used to be. I think it found a place where it sort of stopped growing.
Mm-hmm.
And although they change over cast members, so you see growth in performers, I think the show itself as an art form has stopped growing. With a lot of growth in and of itself.
Well, I mean, maybe I'm the only one who has this impression, but it seems to me that a lot of what they call sketches are simply kind of, and I heard John Lovitz actually say this, are just their premises for sketches, but they just are repeating a gag. And
right.
And it doesn't, there's the story is not there anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of times what I refer to a lot of their sketches as are character showcases.
Right.
Where you have this character, and we'll drop this character into this setting and see them do the same thing in this setting, and then we'll move them over here. And they're doing the same thing just somewhere else. And it's like, we get it. They're a funny character.
Yeah, we've seen it before. Yeah. Plus, a lot of their sketches are not sketches because they're performed as though they're performed to the fourth wall. Basically, they're not relating to each other. Of course, they're reading cue cards, which is a problem. But anyway, enough of that. We don't need to pick on somebody live anymore.
I was just going to ask: have you ever reffed one of the events, or do you just perform?
Oh, I do everything. Yeah. I ref, I captain teams, I play on teams, I cover our voice announcing spot, I wait tables, I do whatever is needed.
Now, does the audience get involved? Have you ever been to professional wrestling? People get really invested in their wrestler, right? Do you have audiences that get mad at the ref when they think there is a bad call against one of their favorite performers?
Absolutely. I've been that ref who make a call and suddenly the audience is going boo, boo. And typically my response at that point is, hey, I'm the ref.
Yeah.
I don't have any points to lose.
It's part of the fun though, isn't it?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
You want them invested. That's
sure.
a great sign.
At least if they don't throw chairs.
That's right.
They used to at old wrestling matches. They used to throw chairs.
Hey, they still do.
Do they? Okay. So it's not physically abusive.
If anybody throws things, actually that is typically a warning that we have at the start of the match as well, that anybody caught throwing any objects onto the playing field or otherwise obstructing play will be tickled till they pee or something. Some other punishment.
Good.
Something
good.
Now
let me ask you about your place in Indianapolis. Do you have these every night, or is it just on weekends, or what? And
sure.
If we were in Indy, how would we find you?
Well, we have shows every Thursday, Friday, Saturday evening at 7:30.
Okay.
And then we have them also a late show on Saturdays at 10. And then, as I said, we have a late Friday, but it's not a comedy sports show.
Right.
And those are also 10 o'clock on Friday. And you can find us either by calling us, which would be 317-951-8499.
Mm-hmm.
Or you can find us online at www.indycomedysports. So that's INDY and then comedy sports ending in a Z.com.
Oh, okay.
I've got it right. We're looking at it right now. Okay, cool.
You're downtown, right?
We are right downtown. We are just outside of the Miles Square of downtown, but we are still right in the downtown theater and arts district.
Mm-hmm. I think the only thing I know how to get to in Indy is the IRT.
We're about 8 blocks northeast of IRT.
Okay.
Cool.
So my next trip, I'll try and come and see you.
Excellent, Marsha. I would look forward to it.
So now, do you change the theme of the shows periodically? How does that work?
The theme itself is fairly set with the two teams competing, but what does change with every performance would be team names and team personas.
Okay.
So, like right now, we're looking at Memorial Day weekend and race weekend. So we've got the Indy 500. So
Go to Indy this weekend.
Whoa!
Unless you live there.
Well, plus the fact,
just drive in for the event at Comedy Sports and then drive out.
Right, you can't even get to Indy, but there's so much construction.
It's all the way from the west side of town. So
yeah.
Oh, that's true. You're better. It's not as hard downtown.
Right, but so like some of the team names that we've already had this weekend were things like the Safe Drivers, the Snake Pit Sunburns,
they're all kind of race related, right?
Right.
Cool. All right. Well, thanks very much for this insight into comedy sports. One other thing, comedy sports are how many in the U.S.?
There are about 21, I believe, currently.
Okay.
And I think we are just getting ready to add Seattle.
Okay. Great. So, but like Chicago has one, is that right?
Chicago does indeed.
Detroit?
That's where tournament is this year, this summer.
Oh, really?
Oh, so there's a tournament. Wait a minute. We got to know about the tournament. What's the tournament?
The Comedy Sports World Championship. We hosted it last year, and we are actually the reigning world champions.
Whoa.
Yeah, yes, you didn't read his website?
Hang on just a second here. I will do this. There you go.
David just discovered sound effects.
I can do sound effects now.
Whoa.
The world champion. Okay.
I think we all rolled our eyes.
Yes, we did. We did. Well, when is that going to be in Chicago? What
Chicago
are the dates?
This year, that's going to be the middle of July, the 18th through the 21st, I believe.
Okay.
And that'll be at the Comedy Sports location there?
They will be hosting at the Athenaeum there, which is funny because we hosted at our Athenaeum here last year. Mm-hmm. But the Athenaeum in Chicago will be where the actual performances take place.
So is it like a playoff, like a with a bracket and everything?
Not official brackets. It's more because by the end of a match, the points aren't necessarily as meaningful as the way a team played.
Right.
So it actually comes down to managers voting on the final rounds.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Well, neat. It sounds like a lot of fun.
Sounds like a blast.
It is.
It really does.
So we'll be looking for that, too.
Yeah, and congratulations on your win last year.
Congratulations.
So good luck this year.
All right. Hey, thanks for being with us. We've been speaking to Ed Trout, the Artistic Director for Comedy Sports Indy. Get on down there and try it out if you have a chance this summer or any time. Thanks for being with us, Ed.
Again, my pleasure.
All right. I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Shope.
I'm Marcia Fulmer. And we are Theater Geeks.
One more time. There we go.
All right.
Thanks very much, Ed. We'll be seeing you. Say hi to Chad for me.
I will indeed, Dave. Right. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Music for Theater Geeks was provided by MusicAlley.com.